Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cagna, and I shouldn't say with me as always is Eric Schlitt because, like, I haven't been around in the last few weeks, but Eric Schlitt is always here. Eric Schlitt of PrideDetroit.com.
It's nice to see you. I missed week one.
No, well, thank you. It's good to see you as well. You know, it was the whirlwind last couple weeks, but hopefully we're have everything behind us now, and we can get back to talking about Lions football here every week. Sadly, week one, we lost to the San Francisco 49ers, 41-33, yeah. Although it depends how you look at it, right?
Sure.
You know, there's some people who are, because you know, there are people who are upset that they lost, which is, you know, I don't know why you'd be that upset because, well, you know, they're not supposed to be this good this year, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Like, so why would you expect them to beat the 49ers? But at the same time, the Lions, you know, had this huge rally back.
Yeah.
You know, at one point down, 38-10? And, you know, to be able to rally all the way back to lose 41-33 with the ball.
Yeah.
You know, going in, with the last drive to potentially tie the game. Now, Eric, one thing I wanted to ask you about that is I noticed on the internet, like, there was a lot of, we never used to see this type of fight out of the Lions. I don't know. Did you see a lot of that too?
The extra fight, like
the comeback,
yeah.
Like seeing a comeback, but we've seen this for years, you know, it's a different version of it because it's a different quarterback, but like Stafford was often in these positions where they'd get behind and then they'd have to rally back, you know, like,
yeah.
So I don't know. It's not a lot out of the ordinary.
Well, I think the difference for me is that you could see, I think you could point to Stafford being the catalyst previously, whereas without him, you know, what is the catalyst for this comeback, right? And I think with Stafford gone, most people are pointing towards Dan Campbell as being the catalyst for that, right? And like, where did the motivation come from to find that rally? And I don't know, it's hard to pinpoint, but, you know, I think it comes down to leadership. Where's the leadership on this team? And previously, you could point it at number nine. And now I think most people want to, you know, point at Campbell for that.
Yeah. Well, it does help the narrative.
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, he's this great inspiration. All right. We'll talk more about the 49ers in a second. Green Bay Packers coming up this week on Monday Night Football, but I'm sure everybody listening already knew that.
Yeah.
It's a big one every year. And, you know, Green Bay, they're in the middle of some turmoil. And we'll get to that too. Yeah. They're an interesting case, but
yeah,
a few things cure a little Green Bay turmoil, like the Lions coming to town. So. First, let's talk about what's happened with the roster. You know,
sure.
Sadly for some people, but for others might be not pleased. I'm sure even the people who don't like Jeff Okuda don't want to see him out for the year. But Jeff Okuda's going to the injured reserve with a torn Achilles.
Yeah, I mean, it's rough because he has such a good camp, and there's so much anticipation. And for those of us who got to see him on a daily basis, you know, it's you could see there was a noticeable change, and there was a change in his leadership. There was a change in his style, change in his confidence. And then, you know, he goes out in game one, and a lot of people who haven't had a chance to see him, or, you know, they've only been reading about him, he haven't physically seen him. He's playing well. And so when cornerbacks are playing well, they don't show up. And then he makes one really bad mistake. And that bad mistake is just echoed because that's what people are noticing. And then he gets hurt. And now he's hurt for the year. I mean, he's done for the year. And this is often an injury where you, because of its location, it hurts your explosiveness. And it's oftentimes where it's 2 years before that explosiveness returns. And so
it'll be at the end of his, well, it won't be at the end of his rookie contract, right? But it'll only have like another year.
Yeah, he'll be going into the final year of his rookie contract. Yeah, with the option for a fifth year. Yeah, so it's a bad spot for him. And then I think the worst thing here is that, well, for me personally, is that I'm just going to have to hear the negatives from it, right?
Well, there's going to be a lot of bust talk.
Oh my gosh. Sure. It's already flooding, right? And like this thing is, he made one mistake in the preseason that was glaring, and he made one mistake in the game one that was glaring. Outside of that, he had been very good. But again, now that he's hurt and he had a rough season under Patricia, that's all people, you know, the majority of people, that's all that they've seen and that's all that they know of him. And so now I've got to listen to a year of it before he gets back on the field. And then he's probably going to be slow to come back, right? Because that's a hard injury to come back from. And so now it just, when he got hurt, I felt awful for him. He had so much promise. And then I think about, like, I don't know, 15 minutes after I realized, like, you know, after feeling bad for him, that's when I was like, oh my gosh, the next 2 years of my life are going to be nightmarish whenever Jeff Okuda's name comes up, because people are just going to be so focused on the negative. And that's unfortunate. You know what I mean? Like, look, he was doing a lot of good things. Like he had Ayuk in coverage a lot of the game, and Ayuk didn't have a catch, didn't even have a target, I don't think. And a lot of that was because Jeff Okuda, but then he gambles a little bit. You know what I mean? Like he doesn't turn his head quick enough on that one play, and that mistake was costly. And unfortunately, that's the taste that will be left in people's mouth for a year. And that's unfortunate, because I think he deserves better than that. And like I said, the work he'd done, the attitude, the leadership, there was so many positive things about him that leaving this way is really unfortunate for this kid. But I tell you what, he's a hard worker. He has the right mentality. He has the right intelligence level to come back from this. And I don't think he's going to be fazed by what anyone else has to deal with. And so, but unfortunately for the rest of us, it's a big blow to the defense.
Yeah. Yeah, is it already, you know, I don't know if I would necessarily call this secondary thin, but it's young, and well, it's going to make, you know, we're going to see 16 more games with probably a decent amount of mistakes.
Well, look at it this way. The top four corners that we thought the Lions had going into training camp, the top four, three of them are gone, because you have no Dunbar, no Okuda now, and they cut Mike Ford. So they've really lost a lot of strength at the top, or at least a lot of veteran leadership.
Or did they? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if Dunbar got cut and Ford got cut, so they must feel that these younger guys, you know, have potential to be better.
Well, so we'll see what Melifonwu has, right? He's thrown into the fire a little bit earlier than what I think most would have anticipated, or even, you know, what more than what the coaches wanted, but hey, that's part of the
NFL. Yeah. That's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
All right, next up, Tommy Kramer. He was released, eventually reassigned to the practice squad. We'll probably see that a lot, you know, over the rest of the year.
Yeah, yeah, there's some movement on the offensive line. You know, I think technically when we recorded, or when I recorded the pregame, we were talking about, I talked about Taylor Decker possibly being put on IR. Well, we now know he's been put on IR. And so then that caused some offensive line shuffling. I think Tommy Kramer had done enough during the training camp that he deserved to get like a one game bump to the 53, gets him a nice game check. So it's kind of like a nice little bonus, like, hey, good job for what you've been doing. And they give him a little bump. But he doesn't play tackle, at least not at a high enough level in the NFL that he can be a reserve or a depth guy at that spot. So they end up switching him with Holden. Will Holden is the guy that they picked up last week. Holden has experience at both left and right tackle. He has starts in the NFL at both left and right tackle. And so Holden, now that he's been with the team for a week, he's ready to go up to the 53. And Kramer, who gets his little bump, goes back to the practice squad, and it'll be a nice depth option for them moving forward.
All right. Next up, cornerback kick returner Corey Ballantyne was signed off of waivers from the New York Jets.
Yeah, so he was injured in the preseason, and they put him on IR ahead of the 53-man cuts. And because he was put on IR ahead of 53-man cuts, the Jets could not reactivate him. So what they did was they ended up waiting for him to get healthy, and then they released him from injured reserve. He went on waivers. Lions claimed him off waivers, and they're bringing him in for depth at corner, but also depth at kick return. Igwebukwe had a, you know, did a really good job in camp and earned that starting job as a kick returner, but then he struggled in game one. Put a couple on the ground, right? So I think the Ballantyne move is competition at the kick return spot more. I think the fact that he plays corner is a bonus. He's really a backup nickel, but with Parker entrenched as the starter there, and then you have Nicole Roby Coleman on the practice squad there as well. Ballantyne just gives him another guy who can play in the slot.
Old man too, 25 years old. You know, for this defense. All right, kicker Zane Gonzalez signed off the practice squad by the Panthers. Yep. I saw that you wanted them to sign ex-Lion Ryan Santoso.
Yeah, know, right
just
back.
Fair swap.
Yeah, just bring him right back to the practice squad. Who cares, right? They liked what they saw in Siebert, I guess. And
he was fine.
He missed left from 50, yeah. Right? Is something like that, right?
I mean, they're not going to find a guy who's going to make that kick every time, though, off of right. Somebody's practice squad at this point.
Yeah. So not a big deal. Santoso's got a big leg, but his issue was always accuracy. But I'm fine. I thought having another kicker on the practice squad would be beneficial, but it's not necessary.
I would agree.
Yeah, not necessary at this point. They're using those practice squad spots for other things.
All right, wide receiver Sage Surratt was released from the practice squad, shocking many.
So now
a lot of people who like them.
Yeah, look, they had three undrafted free agents that made $100,000 as after the draft. All three of them have since been cut. McKinley was brought back, but Adams is gone. Now Surratt is gone. And then they replaced Surratt on the practice squad with the former Packer.
Geronimo Allison. No, I got it.
Sorry.
I didn't pick up your cue fast enough, which is Geronimo Allison. Allison's interesting kid because, like, when he was with the Packers, he would play, you know, and here, like, he's just some guy, you know, it's just some guy we have on the end of the roster.
Which is surprising considering the wide receiver room as it is, right?
Right.
Thing is he hasn't done anything to stand out, right? And he has the same type of role as Cephas, and right now Cephas is playing. Look, Cephas got a touchdown, right? So Cephas is playing better than him, and I think Cephas is in his way.
All right, cornerback Darrell Worley signed to the practice squad.
Another veteran corner that they could potentially elevate for the game if they're a bit worried about Melifonwu. Because you got to remember, it's not just Melifonwu. It's behind him is Jerry Jacobs, who's also a rookie, and then Bobby Price, who's a converted safety. So not a lot of depth at corner, right? You've got a third-year guy, three rookies, and a converted safety. So they're probably going to bring a veteran corner up from the practice squad, even if it's just an elevation for one game. Could be Roby Coleman, could be Worley. Worley's a guy who has a bunch of starting experience as well.
Yeah, 54 starts over 5 years.
Yeah, so he very easily I could see him promoted and then holding on to cornerback three on the outside.
Only 5 career interceptions. Also,
one against Stafford.
He threw a couple here and there.
Well, he had a sweet one-hander back in 2019 against Stafford.
But ancient at 26 for the defensive backfield. So they're getting older. They're now making the team older. This is not going in the right direction. All right, injury report time. Tyrell Williams got a concussion. He hasn't practiced. Doesn't look very good for Sunday.
Yeah, so
– Or Monday, excuse me.
Yeah, the way it works is in order to clear the league's protocol, and we're going to hear this a lot because there's a couple of guys with concussions, both on the Lions and
Kevin
Packers.
Strong.
Yep, Kevin Strong on the Lions as well. Packers have 2 guys with concussions as well. All 4 are in the same boat. They all missed the practices on Thursday and Friday, which means with only a Saturday practice left, none of them are going to be able to clear the protocol, because you have to get in a non-padded practice and then a padded practice, essentially. So you have to have a non-contact practice and then a contact practice. And with only one practice left, they can't get both those practices in. So none of them are really going to be available for the game. So yeah, Williams is going to need to be replaced. Kevin Strong will need to be replaced. Kevin's a little bit easier because of the depth at that position, but replacing Tyrell Williams is going to be a, you know, group effort, essentially, right? You're going to see more snaps for St. Brown. You're going to see more Trinity Benson, most likely, right? Tom Kennedy is expected to be called up, or not called up, but like not active. He was inactive last week, right? So, yeah, we'll see what happens. It's definitely when your wide receiver room is already light, and then you lose your top guy, it just makes things even more challenging.
All right, both running backs, DeAndre Swift with a groin injury, Jamal Williams with chest injury, both were only limited in practice.
Yeah, Deuce Staley said he had no concerns over either of those injuries. And he actually said that the plan was to make sure that there wasn't any snap count limits on Swift either. Like last week, they were a little bit cautious with him coming off of his, you know, injury, or, you know, coming back from the groin injury. It's still kind of lingering around, but they don't feel like they need to even restrict him anymore moving forward. And so that's a good sign. Both guys should be eligible to play. Very interesting. I expect the Lions to want to run the ball, so both guys will play key factors. And it's a nice revenge game for Jamal Williams as well.
All right, edge players, Trey Flowers, Romeo Okwara, both starters, both shoulder injuries, both limited in practice.
Yeah, the buzz is basically zero around these guys, which is usually a good thing that that they'll be okay. Nothing has been brought up with them as far as like them missing. So everything seems to be pointing in the right direction. Nothing has really been said about them at all.
All right, also defensive, heavy usage defensive linemen, including starter Michael Brockers.
Yeah, it's the same
shoulder injury, also limited.
Yeah, same issue. Like it's kind of been a non-conversation, which is usually a good thing.
Levi Onwuzurike hip injury, he's now practicing in full.
Yeah, and they expect him to be back, which is going to be a good thing, because one of the guys on the Packers that is concussed is their left guard, and that would be right where Onwuzurike would be lining up. So could be a benefit getting him back and matching him up against the Packers.
All right, the four guys on the protected practice squad, Bruce Hector, Steven Montez, obviously to be the third quarterback, Jalen Elliott back in the defensive secondary, and Will Holden, the aforementioned Will Holden,
yeah,
the new offensive tackle.
Yeah, so Holden, really, they put the protection on him for a day and then signed him to the practice, or from the practice squad to the active roster the next day. So really, they just have
only rolling with three.
Yeah, I mean, that was just a simple move to make sure they had him.
All right, let's talk about the 49ers game really quickly before we go into the Packers game.
Sure.
The everything that happened in the game is one thing, but you know, something coming into the game that we were all watching was the move of Penei Sewell, moving him from right tackle to left tackle with Decker's injury. And it happened to be, pretty beneficial. He played pretty well, handled Nick Bosa for the most part, and had several dominant blocks in the run game.
Yeah, he just looks so fluid on that.
Yeah, he's comfortable at left tackle. He's a left tackle. And this is what I discussed is like, eventually he's going to be the Lions left tackle, because either they'll move on from Decker once his contract runs out, you know, like, because you're not going to keep these $200 million tackles. You're going to have to start bringing in young guys to, you know, right when Sewell signs his next contract, as long as he keeps heading down the route, he's on.
Right. You're talking 3 years from now.
Yeah, I'm talking 3 years from now, but you know, does it happen sooner now? I mean, I don't know about moving on from Decker, but does he move over to left tackle sooner?
It's a big debate, right? I'm very interested in your thoughts. I've talked a little bit about it. I did Jeremy Reisman and I did a mailbag at POD where we went back and forth about our thoughts on the matter. And I think, you know, we wrote like 1500 words on it. And I still feel like I left the majority of what I wanted to say out of that article, because like, there's just, there's so many ways that they could go with this. I could see Decker being resistant to wanting to give up left tackle and wanting to stay. I could see the Lions wanting to keep him there because he hasn't played right tackle in 8 years, and he hasn't had any practice at right tackle. So moving him over would be mid-season would be a difficult task for him. And even putting Sewell at left tackle where he's still acclimating, it could be a downgrade from an established Taylor Decker to Sewell at left tackle. And then you may be downgrading to right tackle as well by Decker not having experience. So you could be downgrading both positions by making this move. But at the same time,
Sewell looks at
Sewell. Well, but that's the thing is you don't know, right? Like in the immediate, in the immediate future, like we're talking like the next eight games.
Yeah.
Right. But long-term, it could be beneficial to move, to make the move. Right. And you look at all the offensive line experts that are out there, even the national analysts, they all are saying like, oh my gosh, he looks so good. You have to keep him there. And
well,
maybe they do.
Okay. This is my point from what we saw on Sunday. And I don't want to make this sound like there's a lot of hyperbole, but like, remember when Taylor Decker was a rookie and he like struggled a little bit, he was kind of fine by the end of the year. But like when you watch Sewell on Sunday, he's not great yet, obviously. But when you watch, there's certain plays when you watch him, it's like, well, it's not a stretch to believe that this guy will be the best left tackle in the NFL someday. Like that's his ceiling. That he's going to be. There will be no left tackle better than him in the NFL. So do we really want to screw around for the next 4 years letting him play right tackle?
Right.
You know, like. It's, I mean, that's one thing to consider, you know, like if he plays left tackle from here on out, like he'll get there faster in all likelihood. I do get your point though, where you could be downgrading both positions in the short term by forcing Decker to play right tackle and keeping Sewell at left tackle. But this is a kind of a wash year anyways, unless, you know, unless something bizarre happens on Monday where like the Lions hammer the Packers. And that right, because if that happens, which is not, let's not get ahead of ourselves here. But if it does, like the NFC North now blasted wide open, right? Like because it's obviously like, okay. Well, anybody can win this division, and it might be with a 7-10 record. And like now, and then the Lions will have two games of, well, they played like crap early against the 49ers, but then maybe this wild comeback, and the 49ers are pretty good. And the Packers are done, and here the Lions just hammered them. So it's like, who's to say they can't win the division? So like, then you probably have to go, well, we got to keep Sewell at right tackle. You got to keep the continuity, make what they feel the best unit possible going forward. But I don't know. I don't see that happening. I would be a guy to move Sewell to left tackle, and you know, tell Decker to suck it up because like, I mean, Decker's got to see it too. You know, Decker's not a bad NFL player.
No,
you know, like he's. He's probably not. He's not a top five left tackle, but
no, he's top
12.
Top 12. Okay, yeah. Good.
That's where I'll put him. His contract kind of lines up to where his like level of play is.
Yeah.
And if he's got to be a smart football player. He's got to see it. He's like, yeah, this dude's going to be better than me. Like, I might as well move over now.
Yeah.
You know, I guess it depends on what his feelings are. Right? Because you could throw the whole thing in a tailspin if he's going to be furious over it, and then there's this huge problem.
The fact that he's a leader, he could react a couple different ways. He could say, I'm a leader and that's my spot and I want to keep my spot, which is kind of my gut feeling. But then there's other writers that are saying he's a leader, he might initiate the move. He might, like you said, recognize it and say, okay, I gotta move
because I
gotta
get out.
Yeah, he might and maybe
I'm sure he watched the video from week one. It's like, wow,
sure.
His ceiling's much higher than mine is, even though I'm probably better than he is right now.
And that's the trick, right? Like, in my opinion, Taylor Decker is a top 12 left tackle in the NFL. And Sewell isn't a top 12 tackle in the NFL right now. But like you said, he could be the best tackle in the NFL. And that's where it gets really tricky is do you keep him on the right? And then maybe for the season, and then in the off season, you make the transition where it's a little bit smoother. Or do you just make the move now because you're like, I can't stunt this kid's growth because he's so good and he's going to be so good. It's a really interesting thought debate. You know what I mean? And the bottom line for me is that I think the move is going to happen at some point.
I'm a sooner the better type of guy too. And I guess it's only one game, so maybe sure. He's a mess, you know, on Monday, and we'll see. Maybe we'll back off on a lot of this, and
sure.
We probably should take a few games before we. But it certainly does seem like, you know, especially with the Lions and how they do things. Like, here's an opportunity. It's like, hey, let's do this now, sooner rather than later. Let's look to the future now.
his kick, where he just can kick out from that left side, where he gets that leg up and back, is startling. Like, it really, like, he just guys should not be able to do that at his size. And so, for me, I think it happens. I'm not sure when. Maybe it happens when Decker comes back and it doesn't matter. Maybe it happens in the off season. I think it's coming. I just don't know when.
Yeah, off season would be fine with me. Yeah, if they went back to the status quo, I guess that would be good for Sewell too. Don't forget, like, now Sewell's got to have some confidence coming off of Sunday, I would guess, especially with having a rougher preseason. And if he gets six games, eight games that it's probably going to be before Decker comes back?
We don't know. Yeah, it's six probably at least.
So he's going to have six games playing left tackle, and if he improves. And, like, if he's realized, especially, I mean, he's got to be starting to realize that it's like, hey, you know, Nick Bosa didn't own me. So, like, and if you go through six games of that, he's going to be like, well, all right, well, I can do this. I can play in the NFL. And then you shove him back over to right tackle. He might just be more comfortable just by having that confidence of playing so well on the left side. So I could go back to the other side. I'll be just fine, you know, that type of thing.
Bosa said, without a doubt, Sewell's a left tackle. Like, he looks better at left tackle than he did at right tackle. And I mean, it's almost universal that people are saying he looks better at left than right. And I mean, there's enough people that are saying it and enough important people that are saying it that, you know, I think it's a matter of time.
All right, let's move on from that. So that's interesting. And I think it's positive, even though it might end up, there's going to be probably be some heartache because it's the Lions.
Well,
there's
going
to be some heartache attached to it, but I think it's a positive thing.
At the end of the year, you probably end up, this roster probably has two top 15 left tackles in the league. I mean, that's a good problem, right?
Yeah, that's a good position to be in, at least at that position.
Yep.
All right. The defense splits 51% of the time, or 51% of the pass plays, which finally led the NFL after the Patricia era of being dead last in the NFL for two years.
Yeah, it very aggressive, right? Very aggressive. And
which they're going to need to be. It's not a good defense. Like, so they're going to have to take a lot of chances. And look how it almost worked out for them on Sunday.
Right. They ended up getting 10 pressures total, 6 hurries, 3 hits. Tracy Walker gets a sack.
That's the team's only sack. You know, so not getting sacks out of the defensive line. Yeah, it's only one game. We'll see what happens on Monday. But, you know, a concern. It's been a concern for the last couple of years. I'm not shocked. I'm sure you're not shocked either that.
Well, what's interesting about this, about the Tracy Walker sack, is that Tracy went to Aaron Glenn, the defensive coordinator, and said, I think we're in a spot where I can get pressure if you blitz me. And Aaron Glenn went, all right, I'm going to call blitz for you. And then he called the blitz and they got him, right? Like, there's a communication level between player and coach that I think is another thing we haven't seen in previous regimes, right? Like the player, like Tracy said, I see something. Glenn said, all right, I'm going to put it on you to make a play. And then Tracy makes a play, right? So that's a very positive sign moving forward, I believe, right? I think at the Garoppolo ended up only having 2.3 seconds to throw, which was the third fewest amount of seconds amongst all the quarterbacks in week one. So they were getting to him and they were putting a little pressure on him and they were forcing him to just be a little bit quicker than he probably needed to be. But again, that'll be good for certain quarterbacks. It won't matter against other quarterbacks. For example, with Rodgers,
that's not going to matter.
He's not going to be phased by having to put the ball in play in 2.3 seconds. You know what I mean? But then you're going to get into other quarterbacks later on in the season that are going to fluster them. And then that's going to create opportunities. So it was really cool to see the defense be aggressive. I think that's something we've been looking for years, right? I mean, years. So, they found success on third down because of that aggressiveness as well. The 49ers had 9 third down opportunities. The Lions stopped them on 6. And technically, the 49ers get credit for the getting the
first down. Converting that last third down, yeah.
Yeah, that Trey Flowers caused the fumble. So technically, they only converted.
They really stopped them, yeah, 7th time on third down.
Right.
Because, which it should be. I understand they gave a first down yardage.
But right.
More importantly, they took the ball away. You know, mm-hmm. Like, why would that be a conversion? You know, I mean, I get why. Like, whatever. Yeah, I do get statistically why it's a conversion. The Flowers forced fumble was, very impressive. Like, I don't know if that was the Patriots still in them. You know, like, it hasn't been totally sucked out of them to like make that smart of a play that late in the game. Like, it's like, well, you know, although he made the tackle, he was going to make the tackle too, but he's like, I'm just punching it out. I got to punch for the football. We got to get this ball back.
And he threw both fists at that ball and he glanced with the first one and hit it dead on with the second. So like he was going there like with purpose, right? His intention was to go after the ball and it worked. Look, I mean, like Trey Flowers dropped into coverage, forced a fumble. I mean, that's
crazy. Which I've been telling you all offseason is going to be a disaster. Like when they drop those guys in coverage, because you know they're more, they're bigger guys that are more like down linemen. But
yeah,
I mean, like Trey Flowers, who 10 years from now won't be like a well remembered player in Lions history,
sure,
because he's not going to he's like this extremely high paid defensive player, but he's not going to generate a lot of sacks. But like, you know, as long as he contributes plays like this, you know, like there will be some value returned from, you know, the contract they gave him. I don't think it won't be because like when you pay a guy that much, he's got to sack the quarterback a lot or get a lot of interceptions or something. But, you know, at least like he is a solid player. It's not like he's come in here and been a bust. He's come in here and been the player he basically was in New England. So
yeah,
like,
just injured a little bit more than I think.
That's a Lions thing. That's like being indoctrinated in the Lions. You're going to be hurt a lot more.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. I was just going to say the stuff that he does is, you won't find it in the stat sheet a lot of times. And so it's nice when he can put some numbers up in the stat sheet as well, that kind of helps justify.
You think they're going to blitz as much against Aaron Rodgers? Do you think we're going to be number one in the NFL in blitz percentage next week?
I think they're going to blitz a lot. I do, because I don't think they have a whole lot of options.
Yeah. No, they can't just sit back and cover. You'll pick them apart.
Right. And especially with no Okuda. Right. You want to just shift over and get into this?
I was only bringing it up because we brought up the stat from the Niners game. I figured I'd just bring it up for here.
No, I agree. How they cover against the Niners is going to be really tricky. And so I think you bring some pressure to try and, you know, help out a little bit. But I can also see times when they're going to want to drop some extra guys and fake the pressure as well. But look, it's a very different quarterback this week, even though he looked off last week, right?
So it was only last week. Like,
unless
he's like only thinking about the Jeopardy job and really wants out,
will
he be distracted 2 weeks in a row?
Well, let's get into that.
All right, let's get into the Packers game.
Yeah.
Let's do this properly. Lions face the Packers on Monday night in Lambeau Field. Do you remember the time, like there's when we were youngsters and when many of our listeners weren't even born yet, where the Packers used to only play 6 games at Lambeau Field, and they'd play 2 at where the Brewers play, Milwaukee County Stadium at the time. Now Miller Park has replaced it. But like there was a time where they didn't play all 8 games at Lambeau Field, and they'd even have the Lions come in and be playing in Milwaukee instead of Lambeau. I always thought, when you look back on that, it's like, that's bizarre. You know, like, why would you play any game, any home game outside of Lambeau Field?
Right.
All right. So anyhow, that's just an aside. That's, nonsense. So the game's going to kick off at 8:16 p.m. on Monday. The line is currently, according to FanDuel, and that's not, I'm not promoting FanDuel here.
Mm-hmm.
It's 12.5 for the Packers.
Oh, my.
over under 48.5. So
the last I had looked, it was 11. Still,
oh, that's gotta keep moving in the Packers favor, because the Packers, you know, are the quote unquote a public team. People love betting on the Packers, and the Lions are a punching bag. So, like, I'm sure people like betting against them. So I don't know. Yeah, maybe it'll move some more by the time kickoff comes on Monday. We'll see.
That's a lot. I mean, I understand the whole Rodgers wants to get his act together, but all right.
Referees Adrian Hall. Yep. TV, obviously, I've said it three times now, Monday Night Football. You want to talk about Adrian Hall for a sec?
No, I don't. There's not much.
I don't. When's the last time Adrian Hall did a Lions game? Do you even have that information? I don't remember it last year.
Yeah, I can't recall. I don't have, like, there's no history there or anything like that.
All right, television, Monday Night Football, ESPN, Steve Levy, Brian Greasy, Louis Riddick, and Lisa Salters will be, we'll do that version of the coverage. Now we have the new twist that ESPN's doing for these games. The Manning broadcast, which has Peyton and Eli Manning, where they invite, you know, different guests on every quarter, and they just bust on each other, which I'm going to watch it this week. I'm going to tune into it.
I thought it was fantastic. I watched the majority of the game on that broadcast. It's really interesting that, you know, most people came away with the takeaway from the people who watched that was that Peyton is just such a character and such a fun guy, which I think we all knew that. I was surprised how easily it was for Eli. Like, he looked really intelligent.
Well, it's his brother.
Oh no, but I'm saying, like, Eli was like super smart. And then again, I'm like,
well, he has won two Super Bowls.
Exactly. Right.
And you can say, he's not one of the best ones ever, you know, he'll probably go in the Hall of Fame because he was a New York Giant that won two Super Bowls. So that probably gets you into the Hall of Fame, but he's probably not an idiot.
Right. No, that's the thing is, I think we all kind of think he is. And then
because he's the lesser man, you know, the lesser Manning, the football fans who've watched them both play. Yeah.
But I was surprisingly impressed by, like, they'd show a clip of the, like, they'd cut to the clip of the defense. And within a moment, he was like, okay, cover three shell right here. And then I'm just like, okay, I mean, he instantly knows, like, and I'm like, he should, you know what I mean? He's a decade and a half in the league or whatever, right? Yeah, so it's natural.
They know what they're looking at. But does, like, this event, oh, go ahead.
No, I was gonna say, even for, like, somebody like me who's constantly watching, I still don't, I can't pick that up instantly like that. Like,
well, you didn't play a decade and a half in the NFL.
Exactly. Right. I was super impressed with Eli. It was a good broadcast. They gave a lot of information. They're only doing three games from what I know at this point.
Oh, that's it. Okay. Yeah. I knew they were going to do every game, but I thought it was going to be more than that. So Lions Packers is one, I guess, to do an Aaron Rodgers game, right?
That's one of my, I'm wondering if I want to watch that, because I don't want to have to listen to them gush over how great Aaron Rodgers is the whole time. But at the same time,
it'll be interesting to see exactly what they think about him.
Yeah, because my guess is they'll have a lot of nice things to say about Goff as well. But
yeah, they're not going to beat on the, although, like, they did, from what I heard, like, they did give Lamar a hard time later in the game, you know, or at least they were pointing out more how you stop Lamar Jackson.
Mm.
That week one matchup,
they were very invested in the quarterbacks succeeding. It was like they were pulling for, like, both teams.
They kind of have to, with the way their show is, because, like, whereas the straightforward broadcast is fine, like, if the one team's getting blown out, because like, then you just deliver what's going on and you interject with some interesting stats or interesting things that are happening in the game, whether it's bad on the one side or good on the other. Whereas I think the Manning broadcast would take a hit if it's like a blowout, because then what are they really going to talk about and get excited about? Because it's like, well, what, you know, fourth quarter, what's the point? You know, we're going to go nuts because, you know, Jared Goff, they're down 21 and they get a first down. Like, it wouldn't work as well. Like, it's better if it's always a good game, I would assume.
It was fun. If you're looking for something a little bit different, I would suggest watching it. It was fun. I might even watch it on that broadcast.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to check it out. Although, you know, as my dream job was to be a Steve Levy type, where I'd be, sure, you know, be the play-by-play man. I think the Manning broadcast is probably the future of, you know, sports broadcasting from the booth.
Yeah, the concern I have is that there's going to be a lot of analysts that aren't as good that are just going
to we're going to see a lot of that right away.
Gosh,
because, they're going to try to reproduce it, you know, other places, and it's going to be bad.
Yeah, I'm fully expecting
they're going to be bad, you know, like, it'll be in other sports too. Yeah, so that'll be interesting to see.
Yeah.
All right. With Packers, last year we saw Mike Pettine as the defensive coordinator. This year, Joe Barry, who was it? Rob Parker once asked Rod Marinelli if he wished his daughter married a better defensive coordinator. That's this Joe Barry. He's still around, and he's an NFL defensive coordinator again. Sometimes I do not understand this league.
Well, he ended up landing a job with the Rams as a linebackers coach. And then the Rams had that excellent defense last year, where Staley, their coordinator, got a head coaching job. And then just by proximity, Barry is then getting a lot of attention because he was part of that defensive structure, right?
No, and so,
well, I'll tell you what, we're going to find out quick if Barry is a big mistake or not, because last week that defense looked terrible compared to up against Jameis Winston, right? You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like,
although a Sean Payton tutelaged Jameis Winston.
Sure. But I mean,
he looked good. Winston looked good. Like, he made a lot of smart play when we're used to seeing him being a turnover machine, and they didn't have to throw a lot. So like, he's in a position to be in better shape anyways, because they're, you know, they were so dominant running the ball, but he looked good. He didn't make mistakes. And he was, when he had an opportunity to make a mistake, he threw it away. So, you know,
well, that's the game plan, right? They're basically going to take the whole Saints game plan and try and apply it again. And then, you know, the Saints basically exposed them. And so you normally don't see teams get exposed like this until halfway through the season.
Yeah. Later in the, like, cause you know, they finally catch it and tape over seven games. Then they bring it out in game eight. Yeah. It's usually not week one.
Yeah. But they got kind of exposed, and there's a blueprint. And so on the one side, did they kick the hornet's nest and now Aaron Rodgers is mad, or
that's what I think it is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not surprised, but at the same time, it's, if you can run the ball on them, which is not a strength of theirs, everything else against their defense becomes vulnerable. And then on offense, what can you do to rattle Aaron Rodgers? And I don't think you can rattle him twice, two games in a row type of thing, but can you control the game by replicating what the Saints did? Because honestly, they're trying to do this. This roster is built a lot of time in a lot of ways to mirror what the Saints can do. They want to have two back system. They want to have both backs be pass catchers. I mean, like, they want to be able to establish the run in order to get a quarterback that can make safe plays. And there's a lot of mirroring between the two offenses. They just don't have the weapons that the Saints didn't necessarily do.
All right. Another big, the big injury for the Packers, Za'Darius Smith. He's now on the injured reserve, and Rashawn Gary moves into the starting lineup. And now you're Rashawn Gary guy from being a Michigan guy. And he was was he the number one recruit coming out of high school?
Correct. Yeah. And it wasn't close either.
Yeah. The Packers and the Lions both have a number one recruit coming out of high school between Rashawn Gary and Sean Hand. But Gary has not become that in the NFL. It's like the same thing with Hand. They're basically like the same player in a lot of ways.
You know, Gary was a dominating defensive lineman. Like, in high school, like, the guy, the poor high schoolers just were not his size or his
I do like those. I love those videos of the linemen. Because it's one thing when it's like, you see, you'll see Jamal Williams high school tape where he's just running away from everybody.
Yeah,
right. You watch the linemen and they're already like, they're 8 inches taller than everybody else on the field. And they're like, and they're running full speed down the field, pushing somebody, you know, that weighs like 180 pounds. Like, I don't know, I always get a big kick out of that.
I don't think I've ever watched a high school tape where somebody dominated the way that he did. It was very impressive. At Michigan, you could see some of the flaws, but you could also see some of the potential. But for what it's worth for me, I don't think he's in the right spot. It's kind of like how a lot of us have our trepidations about Trey Flowers being a stand-up outside linebacker. It's the same thing with Gary. He's a guy who is, I think, more apt to be successful with his hand in the dirt, and a guy who can move around that defensive line. They've got him standing up where it's a little bit unnatural for him. He's been in that system now for a while. So, you know, he's in a good, he's obviously acclimated more, but I still think he's not quite at the best position possible. And so, you know, he's going to have to replace Za'Darius Smith, who was arguably their best defender. Maybe Kenny Clark, you could say, is their best defender. Maybe Alexander is their best defender. Like, those between those three, it's really good. But Za'Darius has always been the guy who's caused problems for the Lions. And you could really make a case that he was their best defender that they just lost.
All right, sticking with that Packers defense.
Yeah.
The DVOA rankings 32nd overall after week one. But it's 1 week, and they look, you know, bad offense against too. The Saints.
Yeah. The offense.
Oh, yeah. Well, obviously, because they couldn't generate anything either. Yep.
Yeah, the offense, their running offense, passing offense, both 32nd. Their pass defense was 32nd. Their run defense was 21st. But they're actually – that's the weakness of their team. So they got beat up, right? They just got beat up.
All right. So for the line, or so the key matchups coming in the game, we got TJ Hockenson. Obviously, after we saw in week one and what we've been expecting all along, like, he's the guy. He's the number one receiving threat. And how is he going to do it against this Packer defense?
Yeah. What are they going to do? Right. Like, when the Packers defense is on the field and the Lions offense is on the field, they're going to want to feed Hockenson as much as they can. Obviously, running the ball is going to be important. Kenny Clark makes things hard to run the ball up the middle, but you can run the balls in the gaps. If you can get away from Kenny Clark a little bit, right? Having Ragnow versus Kenny Clark is going to be important in order to run the ball. But when you want to put the ball in the air, it's really Hockenson who's going to have to shine, right? I don't know how what exactly their plan is to cover him. We've seen Darnell Savage man up on him in the past. Darnell Savage is dealing with a shoulder injury. He's been limited in practices all week, but he's a good player. Maybe they want to use Amos on him a little bit more. I don't think they really have a linebacker who can handle him. And at the end of the day, I think what we're starting to see with Hockenson is teams know the Lions are going to want to feature him, but they just can't do anything to stop him. Like, he's still going to eat, right? And I think that's just
right.
The type of player that he's developing into. And so if the Lions are going to be successful in the air, it's got to go through Hock.
All right. So we talked about Gary replacing Za'Darius Smith. We also have Preston Smith, what they called, quote unquote, the Smith brothers.
Yeah.
So now it's the Gary and Smith brothers. And they're going to be facing off against Sewell and Matt Nelson. So that's going to be a big key, is how our tackles are going to handle their outside rush.
Yeah, right. Like, typically, Za'Darius played the right side, Preston plays the left. So you're removing Za'Darius and implementing Gary on that side. And it's going to be Gary versus Sewell.
Which would be better for Sewell, easier for Sewell than last week.
I agree. I wholeheartedly agree. And it gets tricky on the other side, right? Because Preston is still a good player. He's just not as good. And he hasn't always shown up against the Lions, but he's going to have Matt Nelson. So now my kind of assumption here is that we're going to see some Darren Fells to help Matt Nelson out. And if you have Sewell man up Gary and you can handle him, and then you have Matt Nelson plus Fells working on Preston, your interior is going to match up well against their interior, because your best offensive lineman is matched up against their best defensive lineman. And you can stall things down. And if you can stall things down like this, you can create run game. You can create opportunities for Hawk. You can go and make some quicker passes. The issue here is that they're still going to have to find a way to stretch the field. And if they can stretch the field, I think the offensive line is set up where you can take shots down the field. You just got to execute them, right? You're going to get Hawk. You're going to run, but you got to get those at least a couple, connect on a couple of shots down the field in order to keep the Packers honest.
Yeah, I guess similar to what we saw against the 49ers. It is interesting that, the line with the way the Lions played last week, to get down so far. And you look at two teams that lost. The Lions made a wild comeback. The Packers, just laid down and died. Packers ran the well, they did. I mean, what, I don't know who's going to disagree with
you. It's just not something you hear a lot. That's all.
Yeah. Packers only were able to run the ball because they got dug into a big hole early.
Yeah.
Only ran the ball 15 times for 43 yards, right? But the Lions, on the other hand, who also dug themselves a big hole early on, like they still remain somewhat committed to the run game, ran 24 times. And I believe they cracked 100. It was like 120 yards rushing or 122 yards rushing or something like that. So it'd be interesting how this game unfolds. Cause my assumption is, Rodgers, he knows he's on national television. Everybody's been watching this game coast to coast. And he knows he's got to come out big. They'll probably get up 14-0, 17-0. But I don't see that. So the Lions then are in a position that they're already comfortable with. They already had to deal with against San Francisco. And they could stay committed to the run. It seems like, in a way, like if we can be, this is ridiculous to say, but like this is kind of what this season's going to be. It's all we're going to have to hang our hat on.
Sure.
Like you said, like the Lions got to mix up their offense. Like if it's just going to be Goff throwing the ball, although they did throw 57 times compared to running 24 times, they still were able to run the ball a little bit. And they still didn't give up on it during the game, and then a little bit less during the comeback. Yeah. So if the Packers get up big, the Lions just got to keep playing their Lions game, and it'll kind of work in their favor if the defense is stopping the run, right? If the Lions defense is stopping the run, because like you don't want to the Packers don't want to be forced into throwing all the time with a big lead. That's not going to, that could end up not working out at the end. It also could end up being like 40-3 at the end of it. But it'll be interesting. I'm just putting it this way. It'll be interesting the way the game unfolds and like what the Lions game plan will be once I think things will start going a little haywire, early on. I wouldn't be surprised.
I do think they want to be balanced, and I do think that they want to establish the run. So if you could take 15 of those pass plays and make those run plays, I think the Lions would be a lot happier. So if you find success, then you can keep doing it. And I tell you, they had some movement on that offensive line. They were opening some holes.
It was it's a strength, or at least it's what we can relatively see as a strength.
Sure.
Because like we've been so devoid of a running game. Now, once again, it's just one game. So maybe a lot of what we're saying is hyperbole, but like that offensive line, even minus Decker, was able to run the ball. They can move guys. So there's finally something there.
Right. And it's not like San Fran's a bad run defense either. They're a good run defensive team. So the fact that they were able to do that against San Fran, I came away impressed with it. I agree with you. That's a strength.
All right. Flipping over to the other side of the ball, the Lions on defense and the Packers on offense. A lot more frightening than the other way around.
Sure.
First, Davante Adams against what will probably be A.J. Parker, right? But, he could probably feast on the Lions secondary.
So what I'm fully anticipating is them to put Davante Adams in the slot as much as possible. If you get him on the outside, you have guys that are more suited stylistically and physically in Owarie and Melifonwu to man up against him. But I fully expect them to try and put Adams in the slot. And by doing that, you're putting him up against Parker a lot of the time. Now, Parker's actually been very good. But as we've seen in the past, Davante Adams is probably the number one wide receiver in the NFL, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And I expect them to try and play matchup football where if the Lions corners hold their sides, I expect them to try and shift Adams over against Melifonwu and put him in a slot against Parker. And I fully expect them to try and keep him away from Oworiye and try and go after the two rookies.
Yeah. Adams, very pedestrian, 5 receptions for 56 yards on Sunday. Yeah.
I'm curious to see if they start how Aaron Glenn adjusts. Like, because if you put him in the slot, will he start using linebackers in underneath zones, right? Because will he start dropping those robbers into the gaps to try and slow up the availability of that slot option? Or will he hang a safety over the top if we see more single high, right? We may see a lot more cover one, which would mean one safety goes up to single high, one safety drops down to like the robber in the middle of the linebacker level in the middle. And then that's going to keep your safeties in position to disrupt Adams if he's in the slot. If Adams is on the outside, expect more cover two, which would mean your safeties then are hanging out over the top regardless of which side that he's on. So I do expect the defense to be adjustable depending on where Adams lines up. And it'll be really neat chess match to see how Aaron Glenn tries to shift the defense around to counteract what the Packers are doing with Adams.
All right, so that's Adams. They also have Marquez Valdes-Scantling, Alan Lazard. Randall Cobb is back, the ageless Randall Cobb. He has returned. Yeah, we're going to see.
Excuse me, I'm sorry.
No.
Maybe Cobb being back will limit Adams' time in the slot, right? Because if Cobb's back, that's where he survives. And so it's very possible that you see Cobb versus Parker, which is a matchup I like a heck of a lot better.
All right, also also another ageless one on this Packer offense, Mercedes Lewis, who's played he's played in the NFL for 16 years. And
oh my goodness,
if you remember when we were youngsters, you know, playing more fantasy football, like Mercedes Lewis used to be like drafted because he was always supposed to have a breakout year. Like, here comes Mercedes Lewis. And like, you know, now you wouldn't even imagine it, but like, he's still around. Like, he has not hung it up yet, which, you know, hey, great for Mercedes Lewis. I don't know. That's always very interesting when these role players, you know, like when a role player is able to hang around for that long, you know, especially it's one thing for Don Muehlbach to play 17 years or whatever, but it's quite another for a guy like Mercedes Lewis to be able to play that long. Robert Tonyan as their number one tight end. He's a threat. Like, Rodgers will use him, but he's not the threat that George Kittle is.
Yeah, no. But I thought Tracy Walker did a decent job against Kittle last week. Now, Kittle's like Hockenson. He's going to get his. But Tonyan is he's a pass catcher. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see if Tracy can match up against Tonyan.
All right. Down. Now let's talk about the run game a little bit.
Sure.
Aaron Jones, totally bottled up by the state defense. 5 yeah. carries for 9 yards. Did he even have he had 2 receptions for 13 yards, much to my chagrin.
Yeah.
For my fantasy football squads. But now we have to look at the Green Bay offensive line versus the Lions offensive line. Like, yeah. Will Aaron Jones be able to get things going?
Well, here's the thing. Bakhtiari, their left tackle, is on injured reserve, or is on PUP. He can't play the first 6 weeks. So with Bakhtiari gone, they took left guard Elgin Jenkins and shifted him to left tackle. And he's actually been very good. He'll match up against Trey Flowers. On the inside, replacing Jenkins' spot at left guard is Lucas Patrick. Now, Patrick has been a guy who's been around for a while. He's been established. He's been good, but not great. Well, here's the thing. He's injured. He's one of the guys we talked about as having a concussion. And so we might end up seeing another Michigan Wolverine.
John Runyon.
Yeah, that's my guess, right?
The return of John Runyon.
So Runyon could easily be their left guard. Now, if that's the case, this is where Nick Williams and Onzerike will have a chance to match up well, right? So Runyon versus Onzerike would be an advantage for the Lions, especially if Jenkins is occupying and Trey Flowers and Jenkins are matching up, right? And at center, they used to have Corey Linsley, who was the best center in the league. Him or Ragnow were debate between who's the best center in the league. Those two guys are both those centers are fantastic. Linsley is a phenomenal player. He's gone.
And he's not even a Packer anymore.
Yeah, they used their second round pick to get Josh Myers. And Myers is starting. Now, Myers is also dealing with a little bit of an injury, but he's expected to play. But you're putting him up against Aleem McNeil. And that should be rookie on rookie, which makes it a little bit interesting. Then at right guard, you have another rookie in Royce Newman. And he's going to be asked to match up against Brockers. So, and then just to finish it off, right tackle Billy Turner will have a matchup against Akwara. There's a lot of advantages, I think, where the Lions can make hay against this against the Packers offensive line. Your best interior guy is injured, and then you have two rookies, right? And so, as we've talked about, rookies can be vulnerable. And so I'm very interested to see if the interior defensive line of the Lions can take advantage of the Packers interior. Because if you can take away the interior, it makes things a lot harder for Rodgers. Now, Rodgers is mobile and he can scramble, but if you start disrupting the center of that offensive line, it really is going to mess the run game up, right? And that's, I think, really what the Lions are going to be trying to do. I expect less focus on Akwara and Flowers. I expect them to be more edge setters and containers, and then really focus on pressuring up the middle to try and get Rodgers into vulnerable spots and to take Aaron Jones away. Aaron Jones, in my opinion, is the key to the Packers offense. If you can take Aaron Jones out of the equation, you get what you saw last week. Rodgers is great. Rodgers is going to play, and he's going to be phenomenal. You have to take Aaron Jones out of the situation. I think I've been saying this for a couple of years now. Like, you have to focus on the right Aaron. If you take away Aaron Jones, you can mess this defense or this offense up. So I'm looking for interior penetration from the Lions and that being a key to success.
All right, moving over to the special teams, not much to write home about as far as kick return, punt return goes. They have, against the Saints, they had pedestrian numbers.
They have a new special teams coordinator as well. I don't know anything about him, though.
Mason Crosby, still their kicker after all these years.
And, yeah.
Not much to write home about the special teams. Not really. Yeah, nothing special.
Not really.
All right, so
yeah, so ahead. I was going to say, this team, they look good on paper. They've got arguably the best quarterback in the league, arguably the best wide receiver in the league, one of the top running backs in the league. You've got one of the better nose tackles in the league in Kenny Clark. You got one of the better cornerbacks in the league in Jaire Alexander. Good edge rusher in Za'Darius Smith, but he's out. So you've got talent on this team, but it's disruptible, right? And I think the Saints kind of opened them up a little bit. And so there's opportunities. That's why I think 11 as the bet line is a lot. Yes, Rodgers will be motivated, but there's some vulnerabilities here that I think can be taken advantage of as well.
Oh boy, I don't like how you do this stuff. I mean, the show, it's not a bad show. We didn't put together a bad show here. I think it's an all right one, but I think we're giving everybody a little too much hope.
It's weird.
We're looking at all this stuff. Oh, this happens and this happened. But I don't know about any of it happening. Like,
well, I tell you what.
It's too bizarre. Like, I don't, yeah, the Packers look terrible. I watched that game. They look terrible, you know, on Sunday. And the Lions, like, they came to life late. But don't forget, they also look terrible, you know, early on. And so, I don't know.
I think they can get a win in this game. But
but
I'm not going to pick them to win.
All right.
And it's now we both made picks last week.
You were right. I was sitting there third quarter. I was like, oh, I got this one. I got it in the bag. You know, there's no problem.
Yeah. I won basically on differential. Right. So I get my first victory of the year. I feel like I do this all each year. I get you like do. The first couple, and then you
see set, like Go ahead. I was going to say, like, what seems to happen, at least this is what I to make me sound smart, this is what I think happens. All right. Like, so it's, of course, it's going to be way biased in my direction. It's like, I'm too, as we've seen in many of the reviews and many of the talk, and of course, talk between us, like, I am more negative than you are. Mm-hmm. And so, like, I'm always picking them to lose. And I think at the beginning of the year, I spread it out too much. Like, I always have them losing by too much. But
right.
The more games I watch, the more in tune I get with the team.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm able to start getting it a lot closer. Like, well, they're bad, but these things are bad about the other team. So it's going to be a little closer than it looks. You know, like, I think that's what ends up happening, why I end up doing so well by the end of the year.
100%. And then by the very end, when you got a commanding lead on me,
then you come back because I get too confident.
You get complacent. Yeah.
Yeah, or confident. Or, I'll say confident. You can say complacent. One of those is right.
But yeah, look, we've been doing this 4 years. We've ended in an 8-8 tie, three of them.
I know. it's impressive.
And well, this year, though, hopefully we won't end in a tie this year, because we'd have to tie a game with the odd number of games.
Yeah, we have the tiebreaker. Yeah. Until we tie, like, I pick one score, you pick another, and it falls right in the middle of
right
it.
Right dead even, yeah.
All right.
Okay, so I won last
week. You go
week,
first.
So I got to go first.
Oh, yep, go first. Yep.
I picked this game a couple days ago before I really got into, like, you know, I get myself pumped up for this. When I start finding weaknesses, I get excited for the weaknesses. And then I start saying, all right, this is how you do it. I picked the game before I really got into the nitty gritty of everything. So I still have the score a little bit lopsided. I did pick the Packers to win because it's in Lambeau. I do have them covering, though, but barely. I had 30-20 Packers win.
I had the 35-24 Packers.
Okay.
So a high scoring affair.
You are expecting a higher scoring team output. Yeah, last week you only thought they'd get 14. Now you're thinking 24. All right, good.
Well, because they see now this where, once again, I'm not totally in tune yet, but now I think, well, they can score. It looks like it's not like.
It's, I mean, look, we both think they're, it's probably a double digit loss. That's what we're saying. At the same time, I'm telling you that I think there's a chance.
Well, of course you are. They could be playing, you know, they could be playing the Super Bowl Buccaneers, like the team that showed up at the Super Bowl,
right,
you know, last year, and be like, oh, the Lions got a shot against them. You know, like, if these four things happen, like, it'll be a close game.
Well, that's what it's about, man. You got to have these things happen, right?
They do. Yeah. If everything falls into place. Yep.
Yeah. I'm going to be honest. I have not, I've been checking the reviews.
I looked yesterday. I don't think there's any change.
I hadn't noticed anything like that. I think the reviews have been going up, but not necessarily the actual written part. I do think we have one new one, which is, I think, Jumanji Jones. I might've mentioned him last week, him or her last week. But I believe we were at 389, now we're up to 390. So just ticking away a little bit at it. You know, I'm sure the reviews and ratings were down because they're like, who is this guy just sitting here talking by himself? And
no, I thought it'd be the other one.
No.
They've always wanted more Eric.
No, I'm surprised that the last week's podcast didn't go 3 hours because I was by myself.
It easily could have. I was expecting that myself. I was getting ready to cut out a large, you know, portion of one of my days to listen to it.
I don't know. It's very nerve wracking not having you on the other side of this mic, buddy. So I'm happy that we're back in our rhythm again and able to do this. And that's it.
That's all we got. Thanks for having me back. Thanks for everybody listening. Yeah, you know, and that's, I guess it's enough bluster about ourselves. This last 10 minutes has just been about me and you. So that's it. That's all we got. Hey, and on Monday night, let's go Lions.